We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio, taking you to 8 o'clock tonight. We're going to go back to our Oakland Heart Doulas talk and text line. We're going to go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. Hey, two things. Me and Charlie were kind of joking when I called in there. You know, the Pelicans tickets for tonight, they're hosting the Spurs at 7 here in New Orleans. Tickets are like $4 on StubHub, Mike. And, you know, it's like getting about the price of a dollar menu, you know, like a hamburger or something like that. Once you get it to that price, it's a good deal.
And, I stopped and get gas for my vehicle, for my truck. And the gentleman alongside of me, he bought four tickets, $40.
There you go. Dude, a gallon of gas, a gallon of diesel or something's more than a ticket right now. They're $4 right now for the game tonight. There's only like five home games left. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to have to really have some good things go their way. I don't know if they're shelving Zion the rest of the year. We're going to see. Last year at this time, we kind of thought the same thing. They got in the play-in game, and then they did what they did against the Suns and kind of, you know.
But, Jimmy, that was a different vibe last year at this time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Totally
Jimmy,
different
another
vibe.
Thing is that I kind of included this stat. The Pelicans are only a couple games out of the sixth spot, right? Only two games out from the sixth spot, being out of the play-in tournament. But the only thing is that they've been unable to string wins together. I know when you look at their record this year, it's terrible. It's like 10-25. But they haven't been able to get – they've only had one winning streak this year. In 2023, it was a three-game winning streak. If they can win tonight –
Was that in December?
No. It was back in, I think, February.
Okay.
But outside of that, it's been – if they win a game, they go on a losing streak. If they win a game, they'll lose and then win.
Well, the streak, but it's on the other side.
Exactly. They haven't been able to go on that winning streak to kind of make movement in the Western Conference because the teams know everyone's so stagnant. And that's what's so frustrating about being a Pels fan is seeing that they have the potential to make that move in the playoff picture, but they just can't string together wins.
And the other teams have opened the door for them.
That's what I'm saying.
The teams
everyone,
have completely
everyone else
opened
is
the
so
door
stagnant.
For them.
Yep, it's there for the taking. Hey, look, and let me say this. Tonight at 6:30 in Gentilly, UNO's hosting Southern Miss. You know, these are my two alma maters here, my graduate degree and then my undergrad. And let me say this. It's a house divided, but I hope kind of Southern Miss wins because this is what happened, guys. They're giving away 400 free tickets tonight at the UNO game. Now, the first pitch is in 20 minutes. Anybody want to take their family to the game? All you got to do is wear a blue shirt. They're giving away 400 tickets, Mike and Charlie, before the game, between now and 6:30, at a table right in front of Maestri Field, because when they don't want any Southern Miss fans coming to the game tonight, okay? Because when UNO played in Hattiesburg earlier this year in baseball, the UNO fans thought that they were getting restricted from coming to the game. So some UNO donor bought all the tickets for tonight, and they're not letting any Southern Miss fans in just about because of it. So if anybody's hearing this, they're giving away 400 tickets. This donor.
So you let the cat out of the bag if you're a Southern Miss fan. Just wear UNO.
Southern wins it. I love UNO, but Southern Miss is relevant. It'd be like if LSU football was playing Nicholls State. I know, and they needed that one game to go to the national championship. Mike, I know who you're going to pick because, you know, even though you're a down the bayou guy, you know, you got to pick. And look, Southern Miss is top 25 team. So, but anyway, anybody wants to go to the free game, wear a blue shirt. They're free tickets right now. They don't want any Southern fans there. And like I said, for the price of a gallon of fuel or a dollar menu burger just about, you can go to a Pelicans game the rest of the year, it looks like. So there's that.
Mike, that was the joke that I told this to Jimmy. That was the joke I saw on Twitter. It was a Pistons-Rockets game, and the tickets were as low as $2. And so someone was just like, which one should I buy? And it was the picture of the ticket price for $2 to the Pistons-Rockets game and then a McDonald's hash brown for $2.40.
I think a lot of people went with the hash browns.
Probably.
On that. Let's go to Menard in Baton Rouge. Menard, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Well, good evening, fellas. I guess there's nothing like the what do you call that, revenge factor of college baseball? Oh, that's a sweet story. So
it's pretty petty, but I love it.
Well, yeah, it's almost like Louisiana Tech and Ole Miss, what happened there. And, man, that I know one thing, that series ain't gonna be played again.
Yeah. What do you see? That's why they should make them. The legislature should make them play those games in that kind of situation. Because nothing like bad blood to market your program, man. Anyway, look.
Listen, you have a point there, Menard. Hatred and hatred and love is a very thin line, but it does sell.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, look. Let's face it. No matter what, the Atlanta game is always going to be interesting to Saints fans, even if you go 1-15,
three and twelve,
whatever your numbers are, you better beat Atlanta. Okay, Oh, by the way. I don't know if y'all knew this, but I got a little factoid for y'all before I get to the main point of my call. Guess what the best thing about Derek Carr is? The number one thing that nobody's ever mentioned yet.
Okay.
He hasn't lost to Atlanta?
No, he was born on March 28th.
Oh, okay. 28-3. I get
love
you.
It.
Uh-huh. Hey, you got to love a guy. You got to love a quarterback for the Saints whose birthday is 3/28, baby. Okay, look, the main reason I want to call was I got to watching Jamal Williams' highlight touchdown reel from last season. And I got to tell you, Mike, I got to tell you, dude, I am, like, fired up. What's it going to be like to actually be able to get into a real – okay, they're running either split back, single back, double tight end, heavy package, whatever it is, and they're going to be able to hand the ball off to a real running back in a real running situation with a real running formation. And who's going to care because we're going to shove it down your face? I'm fired up, Mike. I got to tell you, that touches my heart.
Menard,
man.
You called in and asked me a question about how many rushing touchdowns the
12?
Saints had last season.
Yeah.
It
12?
Was 12. It's 12. The Saints had 12 total rushing touchdowns last season.
And
Jamal
12
Williams
the year
by himself
before.
Had 17.
Menard, here's the crazy stat. 12 last year, 12 the year before, 30 in 2020. That
you know
goes
why?
To show you why it's a big part of why this team isn't winning.
Yeah.
You got to control the things
you know
up
why?
Front.
Wait, you know why that? You know why that number went down? Because we got rid of Latavius Murray, a power running back who was capable of carrying the ball across the goal line, and now we got another one. And I want the Saints to get Tyjae Spears. Believe me, I'm telling you right now, 40th pick in draft, I want Tyjae Spears wearing black and gold, baby. But I'll tell you right now, without this guy, Jamal Williams, you're in a situation that we just talked about, 12 touchdowns. What a shame. You ain't even playing NFL if you can't score more than 12 touchdowns to the ground on a 17-game season. Let you guys go. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you, Menard. And that's the thing. Now,
17-game season.
Instead of 16, it's 17. And all you could score last year rushing was 12. And a lot of that having to do up front. I'm telling you, you get pushed around, and you got to get better. That, to me, was the biggest concern coming into the 2022 season. And right now is the biggest concern for me today. Can you run the football when you need to and have to? Let's go to Kevin and Chalmette. Kevin, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hello, both of y'all. All
right. So
how's it going, Kevin?
I got a question about my Dolphins, man. When are we going to sign a running back? Last year, before the trading deadline, we wanted Kareem Hunt, but the Browns would not pull the trigger. He's an unrestricted free agent. Have you heard anything?
No, I have not about any team coming close. I know Ronald Jones signed today with the Dallas Cowboys, but I have not heard about Kareem, who on a lot of teams' boards, they thought he was one of the top two backs, the top three backs that could be available. But right now, you know, for me, if I'm the Dolphins, I'm more worried about up front. I'll be honest with you, Kevin. I'm more worried about my offensive line play and depth than I am about running. I can get me a running back. I can get me one. But offensive line depth, I have to improve that, and I got to keep Tua healthy. It's the only shot if you're going to compete when you got Josh Allen in Buffalo, most likely Aaron Rodgers with the Jets. It is what it is, but Belichick teams are going to be competitive. They may not be double-digit winning teams, but they're going to be competitive. You got to be able to build that up front along the offensive line. if I'm a Dolphins fan, my thing is I need depth up front, offensive line, because I know Teron's going to miss some time. No matter how good he is, he's going to miss some time.
But, Mr. Mike, the guy that filled in for Teron last year in the playoffs against the Bills, Ian, he didn't allow one sack that day against the Bills.
He did a solid job
the other day.
He did a solid job. He got a little bit of help. He got a little chip here and there from the tight end and from the running back. But I thought overall he did a pretty good job holding up. Now, the Bills, I'm sure he wasn't there.
Yeah, Vaughn.
Man, when Von Miller left, that Bills defense was certainly not the same. And I think it was a major reason why they could not advance come playoff time. They could not get a push up front. Thanks so much for the call, Kevin. We appreciate it. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And Ollie Cosell, editor-in-chief of TheBirdRights.com, covering the Pelicans right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, the editor-in-chief of TheBirdRights.com, Ollie Cosell. Ollie, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely, guys. Let's hope we can bring some positive vibes to tonight. This two-game homestand, because these Pelicans, they need it.
Man, do they. And, man, Ollie, it actually shocked me. I woke up this morning and I hit my MGM app, and I see that they are 13-point favorite over San Antonio. And I'm like, wow. Man, I had to sit for a little bit because, it goes to show you what they think of San Antonio. Because this team in New Orleans, I mean, they've been – the one thing you can say, they've been wildly inconsistent. And they've been inconsistently inconsistent all across the board. But 13-point favorite tonight over San Antonio? Man, that's a ton of points. And you know what my inclination would be? They cover that.
I'm with you. I mean, look, when's the last time the Pelicans blew somebody out to where, you know, for the full 48 minutes, right, they hung on to a big lead? I mean, it's been a long time. So, Mike, I'm right there with you. I mean, they've been just so – you know, inconsistent is the best word to use, right? Since Jez Zion Williamson went down, they've had trouble finding their footing. I mean, they haven't even won, you know, two games in a row since, I want to say, 6 weeks ago, right? I mean, they should have won that game on Friday.
They should have won Friday, yeah.
Right? Gave up a 22-0 run, then lost a 15-point lead late in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's really an inexcusable performance. So now, hey, their backs are against the wall. Now they've really got to come and play. So I think they've got to, personally, I think they've got to finish – at least 6-5, probably 7-4 over their last 11 games. But fortunately, they can get it, you know, things going by an easy matchup tonight against the Spurs. And then Thursday, they face the Hornets. So hopefully they can use that as some kind of springboard for the rest of the season because they need it.
Well, they won't get my money, but I do know, you know, these are games that, man, you take a long, long look at. Brandon Ingram, your thoughts, because I'm be honest, Ollie, if he doesn't come through big, and he's got to play like a big, big guy, so to speak, in this equation. They got no shot for a play-in. Zero.
I agree. He's got to be that number one option that he's getting paid like one and also looked like one in last year's playoffs, right? I mean, the Pelicans don't go anywhere unless B.I. is playing like a top 15, top 20 guy last season. And we really haven't seen that guy too much this year.
Nope.
I know he's been putting up some numbers, but he's not really led the team, right, in key situations down the moment of games to wins. We all were clamoring for him to get back from his toe injury and thought, okay, he gets back, he'll right the ship. That hasn't happened. And a big part of the reason is, as you just mentioned, that he hasn't looked like that guy. So he's got to get back to doing that. And I think, you know, fortunately, he's got some help around him. I think they finally rediscovered who Jonas Valanciunas is, right? They reintroduced themselves to him. Because he's capable of 20-10 just about every single night. So it was good to see him have those couple of games against the Houston Rockets. But I think CJ, that's my wild card, Mike. CJ McCollum, because I was looking at his stats, and he can fill up a box score. But get this, over the last 4 weeks, when he shoots over 45% from the field, the Pelicans win. When it's under, they've lost every single game. So I feel like he's the swing guy, actually. B.I.'s got to play like the star, but he needs his number two in CJ to show up too.
And we haven't seen that CJ of a year ago either. Now, he's flashed it, but it's not been consistent. Again, I use that term, inconsistent with him also.
Yeah, that's very easy to use because it's the truth. He mixes good performances, shooting performances, with terrible ones. And maybe that'll last for a couple games. Now, granted, he's got a little bit of an excuse. I know he's playing through a torn ligament in his right shooting thumb. So, you know, when you've got something like that, your accuracy is bound to go down. But there's other things he can do. And namely for me, it's a little bit more playmaking, right? His assists aren't always crisp, on point, focused, because he has too many of those 4 and 5 turnover games. And they need him. Look, they need him to set up players like Herb, like Trey, who really can't get their own shot. So, and Jonas. I mean, somebody's got to feed the big guys. So CJ can affect the game positively in other ways. It'd be nice to see him do that consistently at a minimum.
Ali, you know, you're talking about Jonas Valanciunas. As a disappointed Pelicans fan, I kind of went back and looked a little bit at their late season run last year into the playoffs. Jonas Valanciunas played a major role on that team, especially late in the season and in the playoffs. He was a shot creator, a shot maker, and I think that they've gone away from using him. And this is a two-part question for you, Ali. After the loss to the Rockets Friday night, Jonas Valanciunas was a huge part of what they were doing early on, but then they just inexplicably went away from him in the fourth quarter, and it was a big reason why they blew that double-digit lead. So I wanted to add, and then his post-game comments where he basically said that the team quit. I want your thoughts on the team's usage of Jonas Valanciunas, his comments there, and then how they can get him more involved, because it seems like whenever he's involved, the Pelicans' offense is moving a lot better, because without Zion, the offense has been awful. But with Jonas Valanciunas maybe getting a bigger role, I think that he could be a little bit better.
I couldn't agree more. We all thought when Zion went down and was going to miss some time with that hamstring injury that they would turn to Jonas and give him at least on average somewhere about 14, 15 shots a game. It didn't happen. I want to say for the first week, week and a half, they looked to him a little bit more than they have since that time because he had a couple of good scoring games, right? But they went away from it. And so that, I feel like, just, you know, led to this offense suddenly hitting the skids. I mean, that's one major reason why I think this team has had one of the worst offenses in the league since Zion went down, because they don't have a dependable scorer that they turn to. And why they don't utilize Jonas, as everybody's scratching their heads now for weeks, it's good to see that they found him, rediscovered him, like I said, against the Rockets. But look, you used him last year. This year, even the stats bear it out. When Jonas has scored 20 or more points in a game, the Pelicans' record this season, it's 9-6. Right, so everything's pointing to they should be using him more, and I just don't understand why it's not. We've asked the coaching staff about it. They say they'd like to get him involved, and in some games try and make him a priority, but he doesn't sit, like, say, number one or number two on a list, regardless of the opponent, and that's puzzling. The other thing is you watch the players. They don't really try and get him the ball, right? Oh, and against Houston, they did. How many times he posted up, I'm not sure, but it seemed like in those two games, between 8 and 10, and they found him for a lot of those touches. But in those prior 2 to 3, 4 weeks, he might have gotten, like, say, 3 or 4 post-ups, and then we wouldn't see him outside the first quarter. They wouldn't utilize him. And then, of course, Willie Green was going to somebody else, Jackson Hayes, Billy Hernan Gomez, going small with Nance or even Herb Jones. So it's been a mistake, guys. I admit it.
A major one.
I saw a screenshot from the Rockets game where Jonas had positioning underneath. He was right under the basket. He was calling for the ball. Yeah. And in that picture, you see Brandon Ingram pulling up for a mid-range jumper. I think it was late in that game, actually. But, yeah, no, I don't understand why they don't get him more opportunities.
That's why I think they really, to be honest with you, Ali, they got to bring in a veteran assistant to get in Willie's ear about this. Because I think a veteran assistant coach who's sort of been around, hey, listen, you can't pull Valanciunas. You can't do it. We got to keep him in there. I think that's part of the maturity of a young coach who I think Willie Green's a good coach. But what's happened this year is, man, some of this rotational stuff he's done, it hasn't been very good at all. And that's where I think a veteran assistant coach can give you some guidance along the way.
That's one of my top three on the list of how you improve this team when they get to the offseason. Look, Mike D'Antoni, he's a brilliant mind, and he's been in the consultant's role here next to Willie Green for the last, you know, almost 2 years now. But I'll tell you what, we barely ever see him around practice. He's never there sitting on the bench when, you know, he needs somebody like that to rely on, Willie Green, that is. And so why not fill that role with exactly somebody like you said? Because there's too many times where the offense has just looked lost or the message just doesn't get conveyed, right? Because let's face it, Willie's an experience in that area too on knowing how to push certain players' buttons. when you go into Brandon Ingram or CJ, say, look, on these next couple of possessions, I want you to throw it in the Jonas. Some coaches can get that point across very easily. Others, I think, are either too fearful or just don't get the message across. So I'm 100% with you. I think a good offensive coordinator would be a blessing for this team.
Amen. I certainly agree with that. What's happened to San Antonio? I'll flip the pancake here. This was a team that had drafted so well for so many years now. A lot of their scouting department, upper management, sort of got picked by other teams. You sort of gotten guys going here and there, and it was a lot of missing pieces of the puzzle. You know, Poppy is, you know, he'll go down as one of the top coaches in NBA history. But, man, you see some of the guys that they brought in, Ali, you know, they're not in the same level of what you lost. And so it's a talent issue at this stage with San Antonio. And you can tell that their ability to scout at the highest level, which they were really good at, has really fallen off dramatically.
Yeah, I agree with both of those points. Look, you need a franchise player or at least a top 10, top 20 guy to have a team that plays at least 500 ball or better. And for, you know, years they were blessed with, right, those guys. David Robinson, Sean Elliott was there with him. And then, of course, Tim Duncan came up, who was then had his sidekicks, Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. So you're right. They hit on a lot of these guys through the draft process, right? I mean, Manu went, picked 59 or 60 in the second round of one of the drafts. Tony Parker wasn't a high draft pick either. So they used to pick guys like that, and it became the commonplace, right? Anybody that San Antonio would draft, you'd be like, oh, that guy's going to become a star. How'd they end up with him? Well, you're right. Things have gotten away from that for the last 3 or 4 years. Now nobody says that. So they've got not only the problem of not having, you know, the guy that you need to have, like I said, a Tim Duncan, somebody that can be the face of the franchise to lift everybody up. They're also not, you know, the scouting department hasn't come through. I mean, I can't even name the last couple of drafts that we've had where they've hit on a couple of these picks. I mean, I've got big hopes for Jeremy Sochan, who's not going to be playing tonight. But other than that, I really can't point to one guy since maybe they grabbed DeJounte Murray. And that was, what, 6, 7 years ago?
Yeah. That wasn't yesterday. Put it to you that way, Charlie.
Yeah. Ali, I wanted you to talk a little bit about Trey Murphy. His last 9 games, 8 of the 9, he's attempted over 7 3-point shots. I think a couple weeks ago when we talked to you, like, we kind of pinpointed him as a guy that needed to be more involved in the offensive attack without Zion to be able to put up more points on the board. Just talk about his more increased volume of shooting in the last few games.
Yeah, it's been great to see. It's been something that everybody's been asking for, you know, since the start of the season. Trey Murphy is one of the best 3-point shooters in this league, I think, already in his second year. And that's why there was strong consideration why he was almost selected to participate in that event during the All-Star weekend. I'll tell you what, finally, though, the coaching staff, I think the message has gone through because they've been asking for this team and specifically for Trey to shoot more threes per game since the start of the year. But for whatever reason, you know, the message didn't get conveyed, didn't get translated, ingested, you name it, for the longest. But recently it has. And I want to say that a demotion, right? Trey was starting for the longest time when Brandon was out with a toe injury. And then Willie made a change coming out of the All-Star break, where he sidelined Trey in favor of Josh Richardson for about, what, 4 or 5 games. I think that kind of lit a fire in Trey to where he became honestly more aggressive. Now he knows his purpose out there. He knew it before, but now he goes and seeks it, right? So when he's coming off the screen, he's not even hesitating. He's going to go ahead and shoot the shot. He's looking to maybe just make a dribble one way, a sidestep another way, launch that shot, because he knows that this team relies on his 3-point shooting. Outside of CJ and sometimes Brandon Ingram, you can't even put – I can't name another Pelican that I would trust to shoot a couple and then he'd have a chance of making them, right? It's not a good 3-point shooting time, so they need Trey to honestly shoot about 10 times a game, and it's good to see that he's doing it consistently. And that's honestly helped, right? I mean, think about that 41-point effort he had. That was outstanding, but think about that. Those performances could become a little bit more consistent like that if he just shoots the ball more.
Ali, thanks so much for joining us. I know the Pel's fixing to kick it off pretty soon here, but we appreciate your time and insights.
Absolutely, guys. Good talking to you, and I hope we'll have something more positive to talk about next time I do.
Ali.
Thank you, Ali. I appreciate it. Ali Cosell, editor-in-chief of AsTheBirdWrites.com. And again, this should be a winnable game, and just on top of my head, that easy win tonight against San Antonio. But, man, nothing's easy for the Pelicans, to be honest with you.
Not quite.
And that 13-point spread, where it's tempting for me, man, I ain't putting my money on it. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870. James from Yawlins will be coming to you right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long in studio. I want to thank Ali Cosell again for joining us, giving us a breakdown of the Pelicans-Spurs game tonight. We're going to go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. We're going to go to James in New Orleans. James, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So I heard a little bit of the debate with the quarterback situation, what Carolina's going to do, what they won't do, what have you. I'm going to ask you guys, what about the size of the quarterback? I know he's 5'10". That's not the real issue to me. The issue is, like, he's built more like a basketball player. So he is the best quarterback in the group,
yeah.
But how long is this going to be? But how long is he going to hold up?
I can't really answer you, James. But you know, I see big quarterbacks go down too. You know, this is a brutal game, really brutal game. But you know, Bryce, you know, he's played that top competition. If it's been in high school and college, he's always excelled. Now there is only a 30% hit rate. When you're talking about guys that pick in the first round that become starters in the NFL. So that's not a high rate. But if I would bet any money on somebody, I would bet it on Bryce, that he could be that guy. I think he's more ready to play today than any of the quarterbacks that are coming out in his draft class. And I had a texter ask about, them draft guys always comparing him. How you can compare him to Fran Tarkenton? I didn't compare him to Fran. Archie Manning did. Archie knows a little bit more about quarterbacking than you and I do, but that was Archie's comparison. It was Fran Tarkenton. Can he hold up? James, I think that's the big question mark, because I can get by with the height. Other guys have done it. If it's been Steve Young, if it's been Fran, Bob Greasy, Drew Brees, they've done it, but it's the holdup. Can you take that beating of a 17-game season? And you know what? What's in the back of a lot of everybody's mind? What's happened to the last Alabama quarterback? Similar size.
He's smaller. That's my point. He's smaller than, in terms of his thickness, he's smaller than Tua. Tua is at least is more sturdier looking. And I'm not against Bryce. I like him. I'm not going to like him if he suits up with the Carolinas, as a matter of fact. But the thing is, he's built like a basketball player. Those guys aren't built like basketball players. Two other things real quick, Mike. I'm watching Daniel Jeremiah. They're saying he's got – I know it's the mock draft.
I saw this, James, and I really like the guy that he had us picking. I'm going to let you reveal it, though.
Okay,
so give it to me.
So the tight end Michael Mayer or something?
Yeah. He has him falling to 29.
Yeah, we talked about it a couple days ago. That if there's a tight end that might take a tumble, it's Michael. And I can't
Which
tell
is
you why.
Crazy to me.
Man, what more did you want him to do at Notre Dame? Okay? There wasn't the speed burner guy that opened up everything. Michael caught everything you threw to him, and he is a really good inline blocker.
Right.
Pass protector. Man, if he falls there, man, it's tough. I don't see how you could pass him. I really couldn't.
So let me just ask, you would take him over the 6'7", 6'6" Georgia tight end that's more like a tackle?
Yes. Yes.
You would. Okay.
He's a more complete receiver.
I think he's, while Washington's the better blocker, as far as the receiver, now, again, man, what Georgia had with Bowers, now he's out of this world good as a receiver. Darnell still is a little bit of a work in progress as a route runner. And what I see with him a lot of times, he's got to do better is use that big body like a basketball forward going up for a rebound. Use it better. Right. A lot of times he only kind of gives you half of that. And so I think that's coachable, and I like him. I think he's a terrific player. And it certainly would debate in my own mind, but I would go with Michael. I just think he's the type guy that could really, in this offense, really light it up. Okay, if they sign Foster Moreau, listen, nothing against Foster, but he's going to be a 30, 35, 36 catch a year guy. You know he's a good run blocker, but he's not going to give you that 60 catch a year tight end performance that I think Mayer could do for you.
Okay. Well, lastly, Calais Campbell, they say, is going to visit the
Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, I would hate that because I love that guy. I mean, I know he's up in age, but he would really put some oomph in our defensive line. You think we got enough dough to make a bid on him? Or
yeah, you got enough money to do it. Now, how do you feel about it? How does he feel about coming here is the other part, because, you know, a lot of guys – and we had on Lonnie Johnson Jr., and I asked him, who recruited you to the Saints? He said, I recruited me.
Right.
He basically right. – yeah, that was nobody from the Saints that were calling him. He got on the phone and with his agent and made that deal done. He hadn't even talked to the head coach or the defensive coordinator yet. So that goes to show you.
Yeah. Do you know if he's from Georgia or not? I know
he's a Midwestern kid. He's a Midwestern kid.
Okay. Well, but, yeah, I'm hoping.
But he's on the all-potential team. He got talent. Now, can you get the most out of him? And that's going to be Joe Woods' basically assignment to try to get the most out of Lonnie. I'm telling you, James, I'm going to throw this out, and I think it'll be more and more as it gets closer. I said this back in December, January, February, and I'll say it in March. Watch Hendon Hooker's name get brought up late in round one.
Well, that's what actually Daniel Jeremiah had Hendon Hooker going 23 overall to Minnesota.
And, okay, yeah. three months ago, ain't no way. Oh, man, you're just in love with Hendon Hooker. Now, all of a sudden now, all these same
he's
guys.
Starting to be a hot name rising
now,
the boards.
Hendon Hooker is on their board. So, yeah, every once in a while you hit on that. And I'm just telling you, in this quarterback starved league, Hendon Hooker, I really doubt he'll get out of round one. I really doubt he'll get out of it. And he's in that region that if he falls out, he'll be, you know, just a couple picks into round two. Teams want a quarterback and need that younger guy. If they have a veteran, I think Hooker is going to end up late in round one or the first couple picks in round two. It's just belly of the beast when you're looking at the quarterbacks, and that guy can play. He can play. Thanks so much for the call, James. Appreciate it. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, finishing up our number three here. One more hour here on Sports Talk, and we'll have my old buddy Ryan Fowler, host of The Game on the Tide 100.9 flagship station of the Alabama Crimson Tide, talking sports. And, man, he's covering basketball this time of year. Ryan, he's okay with basketball, but, man, football, it has always been number one priority for him. So we'll get some insights also into Alabama football and certainly into Alabama basketball. But, Charlie, you have the breakdown of who the Pelicans are going to play to end the season out.
Right. So here's the thing, Mike. When I was looking at the rest of their schedule, they're 34-37 right now. They're 12-24 on the road, which we've known their road struggles have been very well documented. They have six more games at home and five games on the road. The teams that they play on the road are at L.A., the Clippers, at Portland, at Golden State, and at Denver in a four-game stretch after they finish this San Antonio-Charlotte stretch. They have to win these next two games because that four-game stretch is pretty brutal. The only team that may be a quote-unquote easy win is Portland, and that's because they've been kind of collapsing. Golden State's very good at home. Denver's one of the best teams in the NBA at home. And then L.A., the Clippers are always a really solid team. After that, they come back home for a game against the Clippers, at home against the Kings, at home against the Grizzlies, and the Knicks. Those are some pretty good teams that you're playing at home there as well, and then they wrap up the season at Minnesota. Ollie was saying in our interview that he wants to see the Pels go 6-5 or 7-4. Mike, I don't think I see it. That stretch, there was all the talk about an easy schedule to wrap up the season. They had the easiest schedule in the NBA. But look at some of these teams that they're playing. I know that they had those two games against Houston. They had the game against San Antonio and Charlotte. But with the schedule that they have after that, the games against San Antonio and Charlotte become must wins because you had those four tough games on the road and then four pretty hard games at home. So I don't know. Looking at it right now as a pretty pessimistic Pelicans fan.
Pretty. Well, you got right to be.
I know.
You got a right to be.
I see maybe 4-7. unfortunately.
I don't see this team getting hot. I think they'll be erratic just like they've been and inconsistent all season long, and
it's
that's
just
how they'll finish it.
Because they're not taking advantage of the stagnant West, Mike.
And you know what? We could be doing sports talk in three or four other cities that are saying the exact same thing.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing how the West has turned out. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.